All right, so what we got this week, what brings us here, it's slightly weird. So the last episode we did was the Dandyke Mystery, which was a pseudo children's show from 1979 that it's hard to tell. I mean, I guess it was a kid's show, but it was also very serious and had swearing in it. So who knows? Who knows? But we were a little disappointed ultimately that the Dandyke Mystery, the mystery didn't unravel into anything very interesting. It had a very bland ending. So that made me think of Black Mirror, because people have been recommending this show to me since it came out. Like, it looks like it started in 2011. So over 10 years ago, I've been hearing about how great this show is. And it's a British show. It's written by this guy named Charlie Brooker. He writes almost every episode. And I guess it's kind of in the spirit of The Twilight Zone, which is obviously a classic. We've watched a bunch of Twilight Zone or Twilight Zone type shows. Shows like that are always fun because, you know, they won't end on such a dud note like that. You know, they're going to have some kind of twist or something weird's going to happen, you know, even if it's not like the best episode of all time, it's a good formula. So, frankly, the reason I've put off watching this show Black Mirror is because everybody likes it. I mean, this might sound counterintuitive, but I've literally never heard anybody tell me anything bad about this show. You know, they'll say like, "Oh, this episode was better than that episode," but literally everyone I know likes this show. And that's like a weird position to be in when you're late to the party, because now I'm under all this pressure of like, I kind of have to like this show or I just have to keep my mouth shut for the rest of my life. You know, like I don't want to talk to my friends and go like, "Oh, I finally watched Black Mirror. I didn't like it." You know, I don't want to be that guy.
You can like it, and if it's no good, I'll not like it, and there I'll put in all the beef about it because, hey, I'm of an age that it doesn't matter. My friends won't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I'm still a little too tangled up. Yeah, with social mores. But I mean, I don't think that's going to happen. I'm sure it's a good show. But, you know, it's just, you never know. Like, you do get these shows that people really talk them up big. And like that's a bad thing too. It's a bad way to come into a show. It's better to have no expectations or to not know. I mean, there's a lot of like classic shows that I'm like, yeah, that is a good show, but maybe it's not as good as you said it was, or whatever. I just kind of found it was easier to just like, oh, I'll just get around to it someday in the future. And I just never watched it. But I figure now is a good time. Hey, why not? Let's watch it. Let's watch it as a counterbalance to an old style, not interesting show. But also, since it's an anthology show, it is each episode is its own thing. So I also kind of didn't want to just watch one episode and then, you know, make or break from there. It does feel like I should, again, I've heard so many things about this show. I feel like it deserves a little bit more of a chance than that. So I saw that season one of this show, you know, each episode is like 40 minutes, an hour or whatever. But season one is only three episodes. So if I'm going to dive into Black Mirror, I figure let's dive in all the way. Let's watch all three episodes of season one. And in between, we'll review each one. And then I'll feel like that's, if I just watch one episode, I feel like that's not, I'm not being fair to it. But if I watch the whole first season and then come what may, you know, I'll let my decision be my decision. But I'll feel good about however I feel after I watch three episodes.
Fair enough.
So I guess we'll just start this week with episode one.
Because you know what? It's not fair to watch just one show, especially if it's the first show, because usually the first show has had a whole lot of effort, research, whatever put into it because they're trying to sell it. And it oftentimes, and sometimes the first show has got so much explanation in it that it really isn't a true picture of what the show is really all about either. So yeah, it really isn't fair to pick one episode only, and unless it completely stinks and you're saying, you know what, I would never watch it another second of something to do with this because it's so bad. But in fairness to most shows, you should watch them all together like you're going to do here, or if they run for a long term, pick one from the first season, one from the middle, one from the end, that kind of stuff, and see how it developed. That's only fair.
And it is nice too that this one is an anthology. Like you can literally just watch them in any order. You know, we're going to watch the first three in order, but But that's kind of nice too, because that was a downside to the Dane Dyke Mysteries is it was a 6-parter that should have been a 2-parter. You know, it was like a lot to sit through. And that gets even worse with like a modern day show where it's like, oh no, like it's like a 3-season show, but it's like, you know, each season is like a 16-hour episode. And like, you know, you're in for a penny, you're in for a pound. It's like a lot. So that's another nice thing about Black Mirror. It literally is fine if we just watch 3 episodes, you know, like that's fine. It's an anthology. It's okay. So yeah, it just seems like the right show at the right time. Usually I do, you know, some research about these shows, but like, I don't even know who is Charlie Brooker. You know, is he one of these guys that's famous in England? He's from Reading. He's 53 years old, went to the University of Westminster. He's a presenter, a social critic, screenwriter, producer. So I don't know, but basically I'm kind of deliberately not looking up much about this show because I figure I can do that later. You know, let's just go in only knowing that it's an anthology show that, you know, is like twisty and clever. And that's all we know, but that's fine.
Okay, fair enough.
So yeah, from 2011, Black Mirror Season 1, Episode 1 is called The National Anthem. Oh, I did hear somewhere, I do think this is kind of neat. This might not resonate with you as much because you don't have a smartphone, right? You just have the little flip phone.
Yep.
But the term Black Mirror is, here, I'll just show you like on my phone here. So you got your phone and you're looking at your phone or whatever and da-da-da doing your stuff. And then when you turn off the phone, suddenly you see your own face reflected in the black mirror. And it is kind of true because like you might not notice that you have like a bit of a sour expression or, you know, or you're having a bad day or something and you don't realize till you see yourself in the black mirror of your phone and you're like, suddenly you have this self-awareness of like, maybe looking at this phone is not making me happy. So that's what I heard the name Black Mirror refers to. I don't even know if that's true, but that's what I heard.
Well, then every time when you're looking in your phone, just paste a fake smile on so that every time it goes to black, you're smiling.
Yeah, there's nothing psychologically unhealthy about that at all.
Oh, just tell me what's happened. And what is it? And I'll be right down.
What's happened?
Susanna.
Susanna?
Princess Susanna.
So his wife doesn't like him now. I think that's okay. I think he got away pretty good. Pretty good on that one.
Yeah. His personal relationship didn't survive.
So I'm going to assume anybody listening to this probably knows this series and knows these episodes. So, you know, we don't need to go into great detail about recapping what happened. I think everybody probably knows. But I got to say, I thought that was pretty good. I liked that.
The whole idea was so absurd. But when you put it at various levels of what people in public office have to deal with, like sometimes stuff is so ludicrous. I mean, this was beyond the pale here, obviously, but it was the reaction of the public that was so realistic. Like everybody's got their little phone. Everybody's got their little looking for the next little piece of sensation. And despite how horrific it was at the time, a year later, everybody's forgotten it. Let's move on. You know, all that embarrassment is all done with because we live in such a world that is so caught up in all this social media stuff where it's the moment is what is so intense and everybody's all wild and crazy about it. And then it's over and they move on to some other piece of sensationalism.
Yeah, that was, well, I think that's what's so funny about this in general is, I mean, I would bet dollars to donuts that the origin of this was just Charlie Brooker sitting around with his friends drinking. And you just say like, well, what if a terrorist made you do this? What if a terrorist said you got to fuck a pig, you know, and then they talk it out. Cause you can tell there's so many details that they probably sat around talking about this for like 3 hours, you know, and it's just like a funny joke. And then to take it so seriously and to present it so seriously. And yeah, of all the parts of it, I think you're right that that is the most realistic part, is at first people are, you know, shocked by it and, you know, like taking it seriously or like, unbelievable, you can't do this. If he does do this, we'll stand behind him. It's okay. And yeah, you just get used to this stuff. You just get kind of desensitized till everyone's like, here it comes. Ah, he's going to do it. You know? And that when they said that the global audience of 1.3 billion, that makes me think of stuff like, you know, the Beatles on Ed Sullivan, you know, like these moments that have things that happen on TV that are so famous. And like, as ridiculous as this scenario is, this would be one of those moments for sure.
And people who are also so into getting their day in the sun or their little flash of a tit, which is what the fellow who was working for the government was feeding the reporter. And she'd pay him by going into the washroom and taking little selfies of herself in various stages of undress to reward him. You know, little like really low, schemey kind of stuff. And her running off on her own because she has to get the story when she got shot. It's a wonder she wasn't killed. And she was running away from there and they shot her in the leg. Whatever it takes to get the story. It doesn't, there's no sensitivity or saying, well, the person that I'm trying to get the story on, how must this be affecting them? None of that. It's just like, get the story, get it out there, satisfy the public, get whatever it takes.
Yeah, because I think it is also funny on that level. You know, I mean, I feel like that is a relatively realistic representation of what would happen. But even if it wasn't, even if you just look at this as though it were, you know, 24 or something, you know, just like one of these TV shows that's like a thriller TV show, even if you look at it that way, they played that side of it so straight. Like, this is what a TV show would do or how a TV show would act. But at the core of it, is like a joke you tell your friend at the pub. You know, it's a guy fucking a pig. Like, yeah, that's what was so neat about this is, yeah, like they're just put in this circumstance where they have no choice but to take this thing that is clearly just like a joke. They have to take it seriously. They have no other choice. And the thing that really made me feel like, you know, that this was one of those conversations you have with your friends where you just keep coming up with more and more things, is right before he went to film it, because this is one of these little things I wouldn't have thought of, you know, like this is where you're several layers deep down into it, is when he is advised not to go too fast because they've talked to psychologists and stuff and, you know, the public view, if he goes too fast, the public might think that he wanted to fuck a pig or that he turned out not to mind it. And it's like, now that is a level of consideration that had not even crossed my mind.
And you get the politicians at, like, we as the public, just think of it on the one level. Oh, the guy is forced into this kind of stuff, but hey, I want to see the act. And, you know, that's all you're thinking of is him and the pig. And, but meanwhile, they're dealing with all these issues of how would the queen react? How is the public going to react? What is it going to mean in the polls from years to come? If you don't do this, that's going to, you're going to be finished. And on and on, all these different levels of all these people in politics that you continually have to satisfy in order to maintain your position. It covered all kinds of little dark little corners that you normally wouldn't think about, but they did, and they put it all in there.
Yeah, or like when it almost became like reverse terrorism, where instead of the terrorist forcing him to do this at the end, you know, where it's like his own government is basically like, you have to do this now, you know, like it'll be calamitous if this princess gets killed. So, you know, they basically threaten him and threaten his family. And, you know, I think of that more in the American side is what we know more about being from Canada. But you hear so many of those stories. I mean, they've never been confirmed, I don't think, but about X, Y, or Z president and like, you know, like they, or Bill Hicks had an old joke about it of like, you become president and then they show you the JFK assassination from an angle you've never seen before. And they ask if you have any questions, you know, it's like, you're not really in control just because you're the prime minister. Who gives a shit?
Then the other thing that is rather disturbing about it is here, they're faced with this really ludicrous request made by a terrorist. And yet the government has all these scenarios in place to cover it. Like, it took them no time. They didn't say, oh, my God, like, what are we going to do about this? How are we going to deal with this? No, they had it all set up. The fake guy who was going to do the fake filming of it, the photographer, he's already lined up. They've got the studio all lined up. They've got everything all lined up. There's no delay in time or just even a thought process of how are we going to address this? They had the scenarios all covered. And that is really kind of unnerving when you think of all the terrible things that go on in the world, and yet governments already have answers for it. Oh, here's our SWAT team. They'll go in here. And here's Buddy over here, our cover photographer, who'll keep his mouth shut. Everything was covered. I mean, that lady in the black suit, like, she was so in control of everything. Even though she was faced with something where most people would have said, holy shit, never thought I'd be faced with this problem. How am I going to fix it? She had all the answers already lined up. Ooh, scary.
I guess, though, the other side of that, though, that I do think of sometimes is also on the other side of the coin. It's probably easy to assume that somebody's in control and somebody's in charge and there's a shadowy cabal that has everything, you know, locked down. But then I think about, like, COVID, and it just seemed so absolutely clear that nobody had a plan for anything and no one was in control at all. And that was eerie in a different way of, like, what if COVID had been worse? What if it was like The Stand? What if it was the super flu that legitimately killed 99% of the population? I mean, I think it just would have happened. Obviously, nobody had a fucking plan. You know, if a nuke dropped on us, no one has a plan.
But the joke about that is everybody's kind of known that there will be international viruses that will affect the world. And I mean, that's been for decades and decades and decades that they had to have known this stuff. Didn't have a plan for that. But for the prime minister having to fuck a pig, oh yeah, I got that one all sorted out. Know exactly how to deal with that if it comes to it.
I like to, and I mean, I assume the next episode we watch, I assume will be completely different. You know, I doubt it'll even be tonally similar. I mean, I guess we'll see. But I like that it was still funny, you know, as serious as it was. Like when they announced how long he'd been filming and you were like, almost an hour? You know, like that detail was definitely put in there to make people laugh. I'm like, he's been fucking that pig as long as we've been watching this show. You know, like that's ridiculous.
At first, I wasn't sure when they had the little scenario at the end. I thought, oh, they were going to leave it on the high point of how devastated he was and emotionally affected by what he had done. And then they go on a year later, it's the anniversary and everybody's happy and he's in charge again and his ratings are up and all this kind of stuff. At first, I didn't know if I was going to like that, but then that was so fitting because that is how we are. Like, something so horrible and so devastating happens and everybody is so emotionally charged and I'll never forget that. That was a terrible time in my life. And yet here it is a year later. Oh yeah, everything's just great. The only thing in that man's world that was affected was his personal relationship with his wife. She obviously couldn't get over it, but everybody else could, himself included.
Yeah, that was actually somewhat of a strange tone to end on because, I mean, yeah, again, who cares if your wife, I mean, I can see an upside to that, frankly. You know, a politician with a phony marriage, who the fuck cares? That was a bit of a strange end note. But yeah, overall, I'd say off to a very good start. That was a good show, man. I think everybody did not steer me wrong.
Yeah, very good show. Very good show. I gotta give that a number 10, and particularly because of all those different levels that it was operating on. It wasn't just a story about terrorism and the prime minister being put in an awkward situation. It had all these other areas that where it touched on social media, the press and how they react to things, the pressure that people in government are put under, handling of government. I mean, it just went on and on and on. Really, really well done.
Yeah, and even in 2011, you know, when this came out, obviously it's even more so now. But just even stuff like the absurdity of the news refusing to cover something in the Facebook, Twitter world. It's like, why? Who are you kidding? like it's too late. That world does not exist anymore. Everybody's already seen the video. Like, yeah, definitely. Definitely interesting. Very well done.
But then even though they all had this, they started with this moral sense of, no, we won't go down that road. Other groups may be doing it, but we won't do it. But once it was determined that it was out there on Facebook and everybody's going to see it everywhere, yahoo, they all jumped on and they all published it. Like, how fickle, right?
That was neat too, because that was similar to what you were saying about how the government had all the contingency plans, where it was the same thing with the news guy, where he's like, we're not going to do it. We're not going to do it. We're not going to do it. And then they finally convince him. And he's just like, all right, you write the article about the historical significance of pigs and you cover this and you do that. Like, it, you know, then it's all just.
Right, he had it all figured out too.
But anyway, yeah. So let's hop on to episode 2, which is called 15 Million Merits.
Okay.
That one does that sometimes. Hang on. There's a little nubbin in here somewhere. It's almost the only real thing in there, and even that's grown in a petri dish.
See, I think that's where it's kind of good to watch more than the one episode or whatever, because if, say, I just randomly watched that episode, I don't think, you know, I think my opinion of the show would be a lot worse, because I thought that first episode was really cool and clever. And this one, I'm like, I don't, what exactly was the point of all that? You know?
Well, it had some good stuff. It was so convoluted, though. You couldn't, there wasn't a whole lot of rhyme or reason for why things happen. But then I guess in life, there's a whole lot of things that people do that there's no rhyme or reason. And it's showing a future that's pretty friggin' bleak.
Definitely unpredictable. I certainly wouldn't have guessed that this would be what episode 2 would be like.
And especially since he seemed to be like the only one who seemed to have some sense of wanting to have your freedom of thought or whatever. But then in the end, he sells out too, just like everybody does.
I guess, though, the difference that first episode, you know, the PM was put into this impossible situation of, you know, having to fuck a pig on TV. And it's like, oh no, now what do we do in this impossible situation? Where I feel like this episode, it's a whole different type of impossible situation. Like, I don't know. I feel like if you're gonna like go that heavy, I think you really got to have a message that is very worth it, you know, like to literally build an entire society where it's like, all right, here's the situation. Oh my God, you're stuck in this world where it's just screens everywhere and you just have to pedal on the bike every day to get your credits and no one knows why and no one understands what's going on and you just are fed TV shows and porn and reality shows and it's crazy. And it's like, yeah, okay. Why are you showing me this though? What was your point? And whatever point they had to make was not nearly worthwhile enough to devise an entire hell world for, you know?
Yeah. It wasn't the first show, no question, was very clearly stated. You knew who everybody was. You knew who the power people were. You knew the situation, the impossible situation was very, very clear. You knew that there really was no way out of that other than for him to have his little action with the pig. Because of his position in the world, there really was no other way out. But in this one, there were so many things that were unanswered. Like, obviously, there's a strata of people. You got people who are in the upper world, who, like the judges in that show, they're obviously high honcho types. You got these gray people, all dressed the same, riding on these bikes to get credits or whatever. And they all just seem to either be on those bikes or in those rooms with video stuff at them all the time. And then you've got the yellow people, the cleanup people, who obviously are really low because people throw food at them and they have videos of them being put in embarrassing situations and being shot and killed and blood splattering all over the place. And they're obviously a very low strata. So you got three stratas here. And even the powers that be, those powerful people at the top, when you see that there's some way to get out of it, by being accepted on the singing show or the entertainment show or whatever the hell you want to call it. But even they can't ever get out, because in order to become famous, you've got to do all these degrading things and become very, you know, sexual. Although it seems to be only the women that happened to, because he, at the end, when he buys into it and he goes and talks about committing suicide and all that stuff at the end, that's a show that he can never get away from either. But he doesn't have to do degrading things like the women, who all have to be involved in pornography of some sort, no matter how talented they might be.
Yeah, I guess where, it's hard to sink my teeth into, I guess maybe the difference is that the impossible situation in the first episode, it was, like, compelling and interesting because maybe there is a way out. Maybe there is a way to figure this out, you know? Let's navigate this insane situation. Where in this one, it's like, all right, well, I guess society's just over and everything is fake and everything is phony and, like, all right, well, then I guess it is. Like, I don't care then. Well, who cares? I don't know. It's just such a contrived situation that it's very hard to get invested in or to give a fuck. Like, I don't know. It's like, it would have been nice if he did kill himself in front of them or if he stabbed a judge, but I guess it wouldn't matter. So instead he bought in, but that doesn't matter either. I just, like, it was like kind of interesting to watch on a surface level of like, oh yeah, there's some interesting ideas, but whatever the deeper message is supposed to be, like, whew, went right over my head. This just felt like, I don't know, like something a junior high school student would write and be like, look at this edgy thing I came up with. Look at this crazy story. And you know what? Then at the end, double, triple twist, he's going to buy into it. Like, I don't know. This one didn't feel clever to me. There's clever elements, but the overall thing just did not feel well considered at all. It's like, if you're supposed to make me spooked out about the future of everybody staring at a screen, I'm not, you know, I just didn't buy into it. So anyway, I mean, obviously still a well-made show, but now I'm kind of interested to see episode 3, because to me, this is a very clear example of like a really good episode and an episode I could have totally just, I wouldn't have cared if I never saw it at all. So what'll episode 3 be like, you know, because we're very much 50-50.
Yeah. Well, one thing I've got to say, oftentimes you see these shows and they seem to operate on the same theme. So even though you have different actors in a different scenario, the premise is the same. Well, these, I got to say, were not. These are two completely different shows. And if they hadn't been called Black Mirror, you never would have made the connection between the two, because they were completely different. So in that sense, different.
I guess too, like, yeah, watching episode 2, it just made me think of like The Giver or 1984 or Logan's Run or The Matrix, you know, like there's a million stories about the dystopian society where everyone is in some weird, horrible situation, where I've never seen a show about the prime minister fucking a pig ever. That, you know, you know, that was truly, truly creative and unique, where, yeah, I just feel like this is just another version of this same type of story that George Orwell told a long time ago, you know, so.
And in that first one we saw about the prime minister too, you could relate, well, I don't know about you, but I could relate more to the situation that he was in. Not that I'm a power person, of course I'm not, but you could put yourself in that position of knowing that if he'd just been Joe Average, that never would have happened to him. But because he was the prime minister and there's all these power people around him, and this is this princess who's going to be murdered if he doesn't do this thing, you know, you can kind of relate to that, because you can say, and the people were very, very believable in it. Whereas this one was so futuristic, and you didn't know why the scenario was set up that way. Like, why were they riding that bike? And didn't they ever do anything else? And would they ever be demoted to being the yellow people? I mean, there were never any answers to those things. So it was hard to put yourself in the position of that young man or the girl that was singing and really relate to them. Whereas in the prime minister's world, I mean, we see that kind of stuff go on in the world all the time, where these power people are kind of put in difficult positions and have to make decisions that they may not agree to, but they got to play the game. They've got to play the power thing all the way down the line. So I could relate more to the situation that that man was in and the angst that he felt of having to do such a degrading thing in public. Whereas this one, I was more removed from it. I couldn't quite tie into all these people because I didn't understand why they were so isolated from each other and so like they could never get away to be with themselves anywhere. Like it was very depressing.
Yeah, and like when the lady gives in at the talent show and agrees to just go be a weird porn person. Yeah, again, it's like it's hard to feel like, oh no, she's gone down the wrong path. Like, did she? What was the other path? I mean, if there's no other path, like the whole thing is set up that there's no other path. So who gives a shit what happens to anybody?
Yeah, what was the other path? She would ride the bike till the end of time? Yeah. But why? Yeah. What was the point of riding the bike? Like, and as I said, at one point, are they generating, when they ride the bike, are they like a windmill? They're generating energy that keeps the world going? Like, what was the point of them riding those bikes? And getting all these points, like, for what?
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, where, like we were saying with episode one, one thing that was so compelling about it is the depth of how many levels that they did think about the scenario, like stuff that you wouldn't even think about yourself. You're like, oh, they considered this and they considered that. Where with this second episode, like, it is kind of neat sometimes when you're presented with a weird situation like this and you don't have all the details. But I think it's palpable. Like you can tell when if the writer knows the details, you know, like you can get a feeling that even though I don't know what's going on, the person who wrote this does know what's going on and did devise the whole scenario and knows. But I didn't feel that in this case at all. I think if you ask Charlie Brooker, and I think his wife co-wrote this one, I saw somewhere that I don't think they could tell you either. I don't think they know. Like, it just doesn't have that cohesion. It doesn't have any logical, it's just, oh no, the world's a crazy hell world. And it's like, all right, okay, I guess. Like, I just need more than that. I need a lot more than that. So,
yeah.
But I'm certainly interested in episode three. Yeah, because I mean, episode one was so good that they could have a pretty good string of, because even this as a quote unquote bad one, you know, like I would say that one was much, much worse. But still, like, an interesting show to watch, still a well-made show, still a well-presented show. I liked it in a shallow way. I just felt like there was nothing to sink my teeth into with this one. So, yeah, I guess let's just move on to number three and see what happens there.
Alrighty.
Liam Foxwell, welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, little speech time. I've been mentioning this to everyone about their appraisals, and I just want you to know that this isn't a witch hunt for the Deadwood, okay? It's much more of a treasure hunt for the gold. Shit sinks, but also cream floats. Yes.
Okay, so I'm presuming he killed her. But did he kill the other guy? I mean, it left too much up in the open.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I didn't really go there in my mind because I do find most of these have had somewhat soft endings, you know, where, you know, the twist is not necessarily anything too horrifying. Like in the first one, it was just that, you know, the politician more or less got away with fucking a pig. Just his wife didn't like him anymore. And in the second one, the guy has his breakdown, but then it becomes like a successful show. So I kind of presumed in this that it's just, you know, just that his marriage is over. I don't think anything more than that.
Well, I don't know. The only thing is he's so obsessive, right? He's one of these really abusive, obsessive husbands, like to the extreme.
I guess, though, even that I kind of turned around on where I was thinking that was like the one thing about this episode I was a little unsure about is that why is this guy such an asshole? But then when it's kind of revealed that he's, you know, this has been festering, like in his subconscious, he just had a sense that his wife was cheating on him this whole time. I feel like that helped explain a lot of why he was being so severe. So, yeah, I don't know. But my take is just like that it's just bad enough that his marriage is over and he's maybe his kid's not his. You know, I don't know. I don't know that it went beyond that.
Yeah. No, see, I went further with the because he was so obsessive. And so he was an asshole, like, and then when he's got all those memories of her, memories, I don't know. I don't know which way it ends. I guess it's up to however far you want to take it. Like, did he kill those people? Did he just let her walk away? Did he let that man walk away? I don't know. I don't know. It could be either way.
Yeah, I do feel like, though, I don't know, I just rewound a little bit briefly. I mean, I definitely don't see any evidence of that in the show.
No, there's no evidence of it.
Because I kind of think, like, even if you take this at a lower key level, like less harsh than that, like just the fact that there's, you know, a recording of him threatening a guy with a bottle, he's going to be in huge trouble regardless. He's definitely going to jail. You know, like, I don't think he was necessarily upset because he killed a guy. I think he's just, you know, upset because he's completely fucked his life. He's not going to get away with this, even if it is the less severe version of it. But anyway, I would say overall, though, I think this was a good bounce back because I liked the first episode a lot and I didn't so much care for the second one. I liked this episode a lot better. I feel like this, maybe I just like the ones that are like a little bit in the future or like a little bit off of current society, where maybe that was the thing with episode two. Episode two was so deep into conceptual future land that it was a little hard to sink your teeth into, where this one was a lot easier, much easier to imagine this scenario.
Well, see, I went a little deeper with it is when he pulled out whatever that vision thing was that he pulled out from behind his ear. See, that was the record of what he had done. Who else would have had the record? Right? If he killed, let's say he killed the two people, that girl that was with the adulterer. Let's say he had killed them. Well, obviously their system wouldn't work to show what he had done. But his system does show what he had done. If he'd killed the wife, her system wouldn't work either anymore. Only his would. So what you do is you pull it out. There's no record.
Yeah. I mean, I just kind of assumed that it's, I don't know. I think you just, I think it's a lot more, I don't know, what's the right word for it? He's just a sad man. He just doesn't want to remember his wife. That's all. Like, I don't know. I think it's
hard to say.
Because I mean, I just haven't seen any other evidence in this show. I mean, like,
I'm going a lot deeper because I have seen stories over the years about guys who are so obsessive like that, and usually they end up either beating up their wives or they kill them.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we're seeing him a little differently too, in the sense that I feel like he was kind of redeemed, you know, like during most of the show, I was like, why is this guy being such an asshole? But when it turns out he was right about his wife cheating on him, I don't know. I don't think he wasn't wrong. You know, he had these feelings for a reason. He wasn't just being a complete dick out of nowhere. Like, this has obviously been building for some time. And I guess I just haven't seen any other evidence in this show as a whole. Like, even that first episode with the princess being kidnapped, and then it's revealed at the end that the princess didn't even get her finger cut off. You know, it was just the artist guy who was pulling this, like, big, crazy global prank who cut off his own finger. Like, this show just has not demonstrated that kind of a mean spirit yet, that I just don't think that they would go that far.
Okay, well, that's fair.
For the tone of this show, I feel like your marriage falling apart and is enough. It doesn't need to be, you know, but it's certainly open enough that it could be either one. But I didn't even go there at all in my mind. I didn't even presume that.
Yeah. See, well, I did. I went much deeper, especially when he did things like inviting the babysitter in to review private discussions and things. And, you know, I thought, oh God, this guy is really, he's one of those men who's just so into himself and it's all about him and he has no appreciation. I mean, especially when she says, like, he was gone for 5 days. He was just having a little snip. So he went off for 5 days. She didn't know where he was. He made no effort to contact. So she reaches out to an old buddy and gets drunk and they have sex. Well, if he really loved her, he would have forgiven her for that. But now all of a sudden it's, was there a contact? Was there a condom? You prove it. You prove it. Like, I thought, oh God, he's just one of these obsessive people. Even when he's at the interview at the very beginning, okay, they say, we hope to see you again. Yeah, well, in my world, I said, you know what? Yeah, they're not going to call him back. But he's right negative right from the beginning. And even when he goes to the meeting or the house party and they're talking about it, she says, well, you know, they said, well, they won't. You know, he's just negative all the way. And I think, oh, man, this guy, he's got problems. And other people are talking and he's just kind of got this woe is me attitude. Like, he's just so down and depressed. And then he becomes absolutely ridiculously obsessive. And all I'm thinking is I'm watching those things and I'm thinking, Jesus, you can't even have a simple look or a simple conversation at a house party and it's all recorded and it all comes back to haunt. Like, what a world to live in. Christ. You couldn't say something off the cuff without it coming back to haunt you, because it would could be taken completely out of context and you couldn't even deny it because it's there. Ooh, how creepy.
Let's go back though, because I feel like we're extremely on different sides of the fence with the wife. It's one thing, you know, maybe to forgive her for banging this other dude. I mean, serious marriage therapy at the very least. But what if the kid's not his? What if that kid is the other dude's kid? Then should he forgive her and just go on like nothing happened?
Well, you know, in real life, that does happen quite often. And usually what happens then, the marriage breaks up. The wife takes the baby and goes to the other guy and says, guess what? It's yours, and tries to get child support. That's usually what, unless you're obsessive like him. But I guess that's what the whole point of the show is to leave you with these unanswered questions so that you can try to fill in the blanks, but you'll never know the answer. There is no, and that's probably why the show is successful. There's no definite black and white answer. Yes, he killed those people. See, we don't know whether he did or he didn't. We don't know what happened there. Did he kill her? We don't know. Did she pack her bags and leave? We don't know. And we'll never know.
So I did notice, because this is the show where, you know, the guy Charlie Brooker wrote most of the episodes, but I did notice that this one was not written by him. So I looked up this guy, Jesse Armstrong, who wrote it. And it's kind of funny that there's this British sitcom called Peep Show that is a little weird for a British sitcom because it ran for like a zillion seasons. Usually they only run for, you know, three or four or whatever. And I don't know if you've ever seen this show, but it's about these two roommates. And the whole sort of conceit of the show is that it's from one of their two perspectives. So it's, you know, it's just a comedy sitcom, but it's like from their eyeball perspective. So I'm like, oh, that's kind of funny, because that's very similar to what happens in this episode, except this is the serious version of that. And in the sitcom, obviously, it's not an actual recording. It's just the way the show is. But if you ever happen to stumble upon the show Peep Show, it's pretty good. And it's by this guy. And apparently he also did, I've heard a lot about this show Succession, that's on right now on HBO, that I hear is very good. So anyway, that's kind of neat that this guy who wrote this episode has quite a good pedigree of TV. But yeah, that's kind of interesting too, because that sort of makes me think of, I mean, I feel like probably a lot of this is from, I always hear how the UK has a lot of CCTV everywhere, and or London at least, and I've never been, but I definitely experienced that a bit last year when I was traveling around Asia, that I'm not sure, maybe not so much in Japan, but definitely in like South Korea, there's cameras just all over the place. It's, you know, you just always expect there to be a camera. And I guess I was surprised how much it didn't bother me, because, you know, there's that thing of like, well, why do you care if you're getting recorded if you're not doing anything wrong? And then other people are like, yeah, but my freedom and stuff.
Yeah.
And I can kind of see both sides of it, but I definitely felt more, I fell more on the, I just don't care. Like, so what if there's a bunch of footage somewhere on a hard drive of me walking around all these different places, because I really am not up to anything untoward, you know? It's just like, what do I care if I'm just getting filmed all the time? And yeah, I can see an upside to it. If I did get robbed or something, like maybe I would have a nice little recording or something. Like, I don't know.
See, well, another reason why I don't think it was just operating on that husband cheating wife and all that stuff. When you think back of when he first went to that house party, boy, people reacted strangely to him. Like, it's almost like they're thinking, oh, Christ, this guy's here. Like, again, nobody said it. It was all the big cover-up. And, oh, this is Liam. But he has to say who he is at the door. I'm so-and-so from the so-and-so's wedding. Yet his wife is there at the party. So you think they would know who he was. And when you watch that house scene, that's when I started thinking, there's something weird about this guy. Where people are kind of, they're welcoming him, but they're welcoming him is with this look on their face like, oh, fuck, it's him. Or let's give the eye roll. Oh, him, you know. So right from the get-go, there's something about him that doesn't fit into normal society. He's been depressed about the job thing and and then he gets to that party. And that scene in there, I think, is more important than what we give it. It's not just a house party where she's making eyes with the guy that she obviously went to bed with. There's other stuff going on there, and it's with everybody. They're all looking at him like, him.
Yeah, that would definitely be interesting to watch a second time. Yeah, I do feel like there's probably a lot of details there. Obviously, I guess they're her friends, not his. So, I mean, you can infer from that maybe they just, like, who knows why these people even got together? Who knows why they're married? It's clearly not a very good marriage to begin with or whatever.
Anyway, I still like the pig story better. I think it was the best.
Yeah, that is probably the top dog of this one. I did like, I liked, in this episode when they revealed that the kid also has the implant to record memories. Because that seems so creepy at first of like, man, you put that right in when they're a kid. But then in that CCTV kind of way, it could be like more important for a kid's memories to be recorded than an adult's. Because, you know, kids are obviously a lot more vulnerable, you know, like if someone's going to get kidnapped or molested or something, you know, like you want to have a recording of it. So it's like creepy, but if you're going to record everybody's memories, I guess it does make sense to record them when they are kids.
And when you're that child's age, you wouldn't be able, let's say somebody was abusing you, you wouldn't be able to express that. So.
Yeah, even though like as far as the CCTV thing goes, I guess that same theory I was just saying about like, I don't necessarily mind being recorded because I'm not doing anything weird. Like that scene near the start where the guy at the airport, you know, wants his last week worth of memories and then they let him on the plane. Like on the one hand, it's like, oh, so creepy. Everyone can see all your stuff. But it would be so convenient, you know? Like, I wish I could do that. I wish I could just let somebody know with a push of a button that I'm not the guy you have to be concerned about, you know? Like, that I'm not the guy who's going to cause a problem. It would be so much easier. Like, even, it's a bit of a different situation, but, like, with traveling around in Airbnbs, it's so nice that I can just get an Airbnb because I have a string of good reviews that I've never been a problem as a tenant at an Airbnb. Whereas, like, the last time I had to get an apartment, it was in, like, Vancouver. Oh, my God, the hoops you got to jump through of, like, prove you have a job, prove you got this, prove you got that, blah, 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 for, like, a shitty apartment that wasn't even good, you know? And it's like, I wish I could just let you know. If I could just press the button and, like, here you go. Look at my whole history of tenancy and how I've never not paid rent and I've never ruined a place and I've never been a problem. Please just take it, you know? Like, I really do feel like this kind of system, this Orwellian Big Brother system, it just really doesn't bother me because it's only going to be a problem for people who are a problem. And I'm just not.
But what if you are someone who, okay, there's nothing wrong with you. You're right on. You don't do anything really bad, but sometimes you lose your temper about something really, really stupid. And now all of a sudden everybody else is looking at that. And now that's a big deal. But really it wasn't. So where do you draw the line on this stuff and how far can it go before it starts becoming a problem? Let's say you speak out on something, some political issue, and it's recorded somewhere. The government changes. And now all of a sudden, because you made that comment, that's all it was just an anti-government comment. Now all of a sudden, there's the black mark against you. And they start building a case. That's what happened in Nazi Germany. That's why, you know, all kinds of people who, not just the Jews who were done in, all these other people who were done in, who had made political comment. And yeah, take them out and shoot them or put them in the concentration camps and do them in. So yeah, where do you draw the line on Big Brother?
But I mean, obviously, in those cases, it's the underlying political system that's the actual problem, you know?
Yeah, but you're the guy who's going to get done in.
I mean, if it's like, well, to take again, like to take it as a smaller thing, because that's obviously, you know, the world's got bigger problems if we're back to Nazi Germany. But for the smaller situation of, yeah, you know, you lost your temper and you yelled at your vacuum cleaner or something. If everybody's memories of that were all available, we would just have no choice but to stop thinking that's a problem. You know, it's like, hey, that guy yelled at his vacuum cleaner. Here's 100,000 other people that also yelled at their vacuum cleaner. You know, like it would just normalize it. We would just normalize human behavior. It's like you couldn't pretend anymore that that's some horrible thing if everybody does it. You know, I don't know. I mean, I know maybe it's weird, like on the other side, that I'm so not concerned about that. But yeah, I'm just not concerned. If somebody had all my memories, I'm like, go ahead, dude. You know, like I also kind of feel like people get hung up about being filmed or being recorded or pictures taken of them or whatever, because they have this like strange sense that they're important, you know, and they're not. They're just not. I know I'm not important. I know nobody is ever going to care about my CCTV footage wandering around South Korea. No one's ever going to care because I'm just some guy. But I know there's a lot of people that would feel like, oh, no, I'm being watched all the time. And it's like, yeah, technically you're being watched all the time, but the reality is no one cares about you. No one cares what you do. You're not important. You're one out of 7 billion. And I do feel like people have a little bit of a hard time accepting that about themselves, that they're not special. But again, it's like the underlying things that are the real issue. Like what really makes it a problem is, yeah, if we have a government and we have a society that uses the Big Brother technology to, you know, to destroy certain parts of the population or whatever. That's obviously bad, but it is, again, not, it's like the atomic bomb thing. It's not the technology that's bad, it's how you use it. And that's how I feel about this as well.
Unless you get in a world like is created in this show, where someone is so obsessive. I mean, I know you're saying, well, you know, she screwed around on him, but the history of humanity is somebody screwing around with somebody else. He could have just as easily been out screwing any number of women on the side. Who would know, right? In before all this, being able to go into people's past and seeing what their thoughts are and seeing what they did. Before that, I mean, that went on. Well, men and women have been screwing people who they weren't married to forever. And either deal with it or you forget it and you move on. This guy was not willing to do that. But if he had not had access to all of that video of the past and going way back, like it wasn't even like yesterday or a week ago, he was going back years and able to access this stuff and build this case. It's really creepy. And yeah, it may not, they may not have been important to other people in the world, but they were important to each other. Important enough for him to keep going at it and going at it and getting more and more information and introducing it to other people. And what do you think about it? And obsessing and back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. Like he couldn't even just look at it once and deal with it. No, he just kept repeating and repeating and repeating, like, oh my God. As I said at one point when I was watching it, Jesus, guy, go get a life somewhere. Like, it was just too much. It was excessive.
One thing, though, I think is kind of interesting is I still feel like where I just feel like the tone of Black Mirror in general does seem to be a little bit more of a simmer. You know, it's not, maybe that's why I didn't like episode two. Episode two was too over the top, where what I kind of thought was going to go on here was that you could rewrite memories, you know, like when he was looking at his job interview, I thought he was going to fix his own memory so that he would remember that it had gone better than it went. You know, like I thought it was going to be much more dystopian than it is. The fact that it literally is just a recording that cannot be altered makes it a lot less bad to me. Like, it's obviously unhealthy and obsessive. But even if he didn't have the precise memories, I don't think it would have been that different for him, because he would have just been remembering his memories with his normal memory. Like, he still would have known there was something wrong in his marriage, and he still would have been the same kind of asshole. You know, again, I don't think the technology caused him to act this way. I think he would have reacted exactly the same way. He just would have had a much harder time unraveling the truth. But yeah, this I guess this technology, like, yeah, I thought it was going to be so much creepier. I thought it was going to be like, you pay for, well, like the movie Total Recall, you know, you can implant memories in your brain of a vacation you never went on, because it's just cheaper to buy the memory, you know, and you just remember the nice memory. But this wasn't even like that. This really was just, here's the facts. Here's just the recording. If anything, yeah, it's just like, how boring to just go back through all your, oh, look at this. I mean, like the guy with the frayed carpet and going back through or the guy obsessing over the party and the job interview. Like, yeah, this felt less dystopian to me and just more like how freaking boring. Like, oh my God.
Yeah. Boring, but very demeaning to an individual like him. Okay, so he goes to the party and they keep egging him on. Well, let's look at the interview. Let's comment. Let's think what we see about it. Like, can you imagine, you've just come out of an interview, you're feeling that you didn't do well at it, whatever was said. Yet people at the party, and the humanity is like this, like they want to comment on it. Like, and if you're feeling pretty like, you know, geez, I don't know. And he tried to talk his way out of that, but oh no, let's look at it. Oh, somebody's with the notepad and they're going into extreme details and you're feeling bad enough already that you probably blew it. And they're all commenting on it too and reliving it for you. Like, oh my God, what a terrible way to have to live your life. Like, that's the high point of the party, them dissecting your interview that you don't feel all that great about anyway. And if you didn't feel great about it when you went to that party, you sure as hell wouldn't feel good when you went home. Everybody else commenting on how bad you did. Oh, what did she write in that notepad? Oh, I think it was this. No, it could have been that. Oh, God. I think that's when I said, oh, good God, go get a life. Like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah, and I think obviously there's a lot of analogs to, you know, cell phones and stuff in the current age where, yeah, I kind of like that they put in that character who had her implant taken out so she couldn't remember her memories. Because, yeah, like even in the modern era, like you don't have a smartphone. I do have a smartphone, but I don't have a data plan. So like I need to get Wi-Fi from Tim Hortons or whatever to go online. But I feel like that obsessiveness of like, once I do get to a coffee shop, I always do log on just to, I don't know, maybe I got an Instagram message or something. It's so hard not to, or just check your email or whatever. But it does get in the way sometimes too. Like just trying to do laundry here in Toronto, they wanted me to download an app to use the laundromat. And it would have been so much easier if I could have done that, but I couldn't because I didn't have internet. But I still prefer, you're at the most distance because you don't have a smartphone at all. I'm at a medium distance because I have one, but I don't have internet all the time. But most people do just have a smartphone and internet all the time. And yeah, it's similar to in this show, how everyone is obsessively going over their memories. Our version now is like, when you can always check your messages all the time, it's so hard not to. Like, that's why I don't have those like data plans, because I know I'll just always be pulling out my phone to check. So just to keep it reasonable, at least now I can only check at certain points in the day, you know? So yeah, it's pretty easy to draw correlations to what's going on now.
Okay. And speaking about that, okay, so when you're checking your, not you, but I mean, I see people with their phones are like, it's like 24 hours a day. What the hell could they be checking? Who the hell is so important that they're getting messages that are that important? Like, what are you going to have for supper? Where are you going to, you're going to order an orange pop or a Coca-Cola? Like, what in your life is so important that everybody has to check all this stuff all the time? But that's what it was like in this movie. Like, they would just go back and revisit these things and revisit and revisit over and over and over again. Like, God. And so, okay, you mentioned the guy with the carpet, how obsessed he was about his stupid fray in the carpet. Okay, all right, buddy. You said it once. We all saw it. But it kept coming back. Oh, the fray in the carpet, the fray in the carpet. Like, oh, my God, get over it. So it's a fray in the carpet. Get a pair of scissors and trim it off. Get on with it.
Yeah, that's what was quite funny about this. Because even at that point, I still thought it was going to be a memory rewriting thing. Like, I thought that guy was going to spend some credits or whatever to fix his memory so that his 5-star hotel in his memory didn't have a frayed carpet. But that never happened. It literally is just he had a frayed carpet and he's complaining about it. It's like the most boring version.
Not only did he complain about it, he ranted. And he ranted. And he ranted.
Yeah, I guess it's that main character syndrome. That thing I was saying before about CCTVs and people have a hard time believing that they're not important. It's that thing. It's like you just think it's interesting because it happened to you. But it's not. It's just so boring.
Yeah, exactly.
But I respected that about this episode. I liked that it was so boring. Like, it really wasn't. Like, that's where episode 2, yeah, like they were trying to like devise this weird world that you're supposed to feel creepy about how awful the world is. And it was awful, but it was just like, I'm like, I don't understand why I'm watching this. Where I liked in this episode that, yeah, I understand why this world sucks. And it's just because it's so fucking boring. And it's where we're all heading. It's like, man, holy crap.
That's right. As I said, that's 2011. Here we are, 12 years, 13 years later, 14 years later. And yeah, it's getting more and more like that show.
But yeah, in Total Recall, where Total Recall again was, false memories, it was about a guy who, you know, he's like a secret agent or whatever, you know, and he's going on a big adventure to Mars. But then the kind of twisty end is you don't actually know. It was like a Philip K. Dick story. You don't actually know if any of that's real or if he's just some average Joe who paid to put these memories in his mind so he would remember having an exciting life, even though he doesn't. So yeah, that's what I really did like about this Black Mirror episode is it wasn't that. It's not a secret agent. It's not an exciting life. It's not even the prime minister. This really was a nothing story about nobodies, but it really worked well in that sense.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, it did. And to deal with, I mean, they kind of went over the top a little bit with his obsessiveness, but it really wasn't over the top because there are people who are tied into that electronic world who it is all about their lives and how they feel about this. And he played that part perfectly. Because at the end of the day, it was all about him and how he felt downtrodden and how he felt that nobody appreciated him. His wife didn't love him. The kid probably wasn't his. At the job, he's a lawyer, for God's sake. And yet they kind of looked down on him like, yeah, we're a big deal, buddy. Hopefully we'll get back to you. And it was all so sweet and above board and saccharine and so obviously that they weren't interested in him.
I like, too, how this one also did have some of those little details like the first episode had, little things that, like, when I saw them, I'm like, oh, I wouldn't have thought of that. Like, I liked how in his fight with his wife, just the little thing that he says, sometimes you're a bitch, but in a split second, like, you can tell she's very used to, you know, replaying memories. She immediately plays it back to him as you're a bitch. And he's like, you can't just take the first word out. And the other one that I thought was pretty funny was when the lady got her implant taken out and they mentioned that, you know, she made some money by selling it to some creep, unencoded or whatever, unfiltered, just here's all my memories of everything I've ever done. So yeah, some guy now can go through every time she ever took a shower, every time she ever went to the washroom, you know, and I'm sure you would get big bucks for that. That's to the right kind of person. That's valuable, but so eerie and so creepy.
So when he took his out at the end, what did he do with it? Did it show? I don't think it showed that. It showed the blood coming into the sink and it showed the razor blade dropping. But I don't think it showed what happened with that thing.
I'm actually surprised he was able to take it out at all. I feel like maybe it should have been like, it would have been kind of a grosser ending if he kept gouging at himself trying to take it out. But I really feel like the way that lady described having hers taken out, it sounded like so much more of a surgical procedure.
And the scar, her scar was a big, long scar, real rough looking. And well, his, it was almost like he was cutting, it was almost like he was pulling out a pimple. Well, a little bigger than a pimple, but.
Yeah, like I presume this thing would just be way more tied into your whole nervous system than that. Yeah, I was a little, I thought that was a little strange that he was even able to do that at home. I don't know. I don't think that, because if it was that easy, like, I bet that would happen. Like, you know, you rob somebody and then you cut out their memory chip.
Right. They cut out their memory. Sure.
Yeah. Like, that's a little bit odd. I feel like, yeah, he should have tried to get it out. But I don't think it should be a lot deeper in there. It shouldn't be something you can do by yourself.
Yeah.
But that's just, yeah, I guess a little tech point. But anyway, overall, there we go. We watched season one of Black Mirror. After all these years, I finally, now at least I can talk about some of the episodes. And apparently this one, this episode we just watched, and the pig episode, they're both two of the most famous episodes. So at least now if I'm at some kind of dinner party and somebody brings up Black Mirror, at least now I can have an opinion. I know something about this show. And on the whole, I'd say, yeah, it is pretty good. I think its reputation is pretty well earned.
Yeah, I agree.